Welcome to Scary Basement. Each week, me and my friend Roxy are drawn inexplicably and supernaturally to this basement, wherein lurks every scary thing that has ever been, including a call coming from within the house, a bunch of baby dolls all hung from the ceiling, a smattering of Nosferatus, and a hill with eyes. It's not a metaphor. That hill has big human eyes. My name is Mikey McCaller.
And I'm Roxy Polk, and I am terrified at the hill with eyes that is currently watching us right now.
It's blinking. Have you read The Great Gatsby, Roxy?
Yeah. Are you thinking of that, like, old book cover that has the big eyes on it?
Yeah. The eyes of Dr. T.J. Edinburgh. Now it's real. Now it's not. What's scariest to me is things that were metaphors are no longer metaphors. Roxy, we're back in the scary basement. It's been a summer off. We're here to see more horror.
It's season two, Mikey. I could not be more excited.
Very excited. It's good to be back here amongst all the monsters that roam the liminal space that is the scary basement. Who do you see as we walk past, Roxy? I've got a little, a big spider crawling around the corner. How you doing, big spider? Good to see you. Have a good summer.
Oh, that one with the human face. Yeah. Hi, I hope they had a good summer.
Yeah, he's clearly in pain.
I see our old friend, the creature from the Black Lagoon. I don't know if this is the one you hooked up with that one fateful night, Mikey. They all look the same to me. Only you will know.
Unbelievable that you would say that with a straight face, Roxy. They don't all look the same.
They've all got the same haircut, okay? I identify people by their haircuts.
That's fair. You famously have facial blindness. And Roxy, here he is, our number one best pal down here in the scary basement, the Demon Bot. Yes, the Demon Bot. He's trying to steal our souls, but he's back to steal our hearts. How you doing, Demon Bot? How was your summer?
You know, I can't believe I'm actually saying this, but I somehow missed the Demon Bot. I would also like to know how your summer was, Demon Bot.
Mikey and Roxy, I had a pleasant summer vacation. I caught up on movies. Did you know they're also making text-based versions of movies? They're called books, and some of them are about movies they haven't even made yet.
Nice, that's a good time. Cool, that's what summer's for, kind of, you know?
Demon Bot, yeah, it is good to see you. We did miss you a lot. Even though you're kind of a horrific robot monster who's been after us for a while, I did find myself growing attached to you throughout the years.
Isn't it funny how you start to grow attached to those you see every day? Even if they want to steal your soul. Mikey and Roxy, for the first week back in the scary basement, you were assigned the film.
No, the Demon Bot!
Oh my god, he got chainsawed!
Dad, he's dead now! Killed the robot man, and now I kill you!
Roxy, run!
Quick, get in here! In that scary closet, Mikey!
Roxy, what was that thing? Some kind of new robot? And he wants to chainsaw us to death?
And he was wearing a pig mask, right? I saw a pig mask on him, right?
Yeah, I saw that too. Like, he's a robot. He's very clearly a robot. What identity does he have to hide?
Yeah, like, what is under there? More robotics? Who cares?
Okay, all right. Roxy, I do not want to die tonight at the chainsaw of a pig bot. Look around this room. What do you see? What can we use to fight him off?
I don't know. There's nothing in here except for, like, an old TV and a recliner and a VCR. Wait a minute. Is that a shelf of VHS tapes, Mikey?
Of course! Roxy, there are horror movies in here. How do you defeat a robot?
I don't know, maybe throw water on him, short-circuit him out, blow his logic chip and ask him to divide by zero? I don't know.
No. Roxy, the answer is art. We're human beings, and our one advantage over robots is our ability to interpret and process art. You and me, Roxy, we've seen hundreds of horror movies where killers chase their idiotic victims, and now we're the idiotic victims. But we've seen enough art. We've been commenting on this stuff for years. We know how to survive. How are we going to survive this horror movie?
Okay. First, we identify the kind of killer we're up against. The way we'd survive against Chucky is different from the way we'd survive against, like, Pumpkinhead or something, you know? We need a strategy.
Okay. I will say, the pig bot out there, He's giving me real Texas Chainsaw Massacre vibes.
I can see that, definitely. And I actually just watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre last week.
Weird, I also watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre last week.
Weird!
Roxy, what do you say we recap and review the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and see if, in discussing the ways that those kids could have survived a chainsaw-wielding maniac, we come up with ideas for how we can survive a chainsaw-wielding maniac?
Sounds good to me. Let's do it.
Great. First of all, Roxy, let's talk a little bit about the characters from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Who are the important people we need to know going into this movie?
All right, so there's two groups of people, the teens and the cannibal family. First, representing the teens, is Sally, a nice blonde gal on a road trip with her pals.
We've also got Jerry, a boy. He's dating Sally. A lot of these characters, very thin. They're just on an adventure going through Texas.
Then we've got Kirk and Pam, who are a couple, and between them basically have one personality trait, which is Pam likes astrology, unless you want to count Kirk's fashion, which is open shirt, hairy chest, and extreme bell bottoms and a crazy haircut.
The man's proud of himself.
Yeah, he's truly living that 70s lifestyle.
Rounding out the teens, we have Franklin, who is a husky boy in a wheelchair. He is the only one on the trip without a significant other, but to make up for it, he's also the one with any emotional depth. So win some, lose some, I guess.
He and Sally are also siblings. So I think the only reason why Franklin is here is because he is Sally's brother. And then we have the Chainsaw family. First up is the hitchhiker, a mentally unbalanced man in his early teens, 20s. Who can tell? It's really hard to tell with this man, truly. He has hobbies, including cutting open his own hand in front of people and laughing about it, and murdering the innocent, as well as photography.
Also in the cannibal family, we have the cook. He's the head of the cannibal family. The cook doesn't take no pleasure in killing. He's got that sweet Texas drawl. He don't take no pleasure in cooking, but he does take pleasure in running a gas station that fails at its one gas station job, which is having gas.
He's really dedicated to his job as the harbinger, strangely, for some reason, even though you'd think he'd be one to get the more victims. Whatever. It's a whole big thing. And then finally, well, I shouldn't say finally, we still got more to go, but he is the oldest member of the family, is Grandpa, an old man who was the best killer in town until he got old, apparently. Only his grandkids can vouch for him, so I don't know if I believe him, but could be true.
And of course, the main event of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is Leatherface. He's a big old boy. He makes oinking noises as he hacks up teens. Later on, he puts on makeup to play the family's mom. He's a wild one. And the thing you gotta know about Leatherface is he loves him a chainsaw.
Oh boy, does he.
Let's get into the plot, Roxy, of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We open on a documentary-like voiceover that describes the horrific nature of an incident known as the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We get news voiceover describing a small town in rural Texas where bodies are being dug up. There's a grave robber on the loose.
Then we meet the teens, Sally, Jerry, Pam, Kirk, and Franklin. They stop at a local cemetery to make sure their grandfather's grave hasn't been among those who has been dug up. Luckily, it hasn't.
Grandpa's safe. Back on the road, Franklin talks the history that he and Sally's family have in the meat business. They used to work at a butcher where they would kill cattle with a sledgehammer. They just whacked it in the head. Everyone's kind of uncomfortable. Franklin's kind of a weird dude.
Yeah, it lingers for a really long time and talks in extreme detail. I think after they pass, like, a slaughterhouse as well. So they're like, oh, what's that disgusting scent? And then he starts talking about this nonstop.
Let me tell you about meat.
Yeah, nobody wants to know. Except for when the teens stop for gas, there's an old man at the gas station who is selling meat. He's selling meat, but no gas. So they go there, and there is no gas at the gas station. So they're kind of fucked.
Yeah, it's very fun to roll up into a gas station. He's like, we've got barbecue.
Yeah. And they actually buy some and eat it. I think Kirk and Franklin eat it. They're the only ones.
Have you ever gone to Cold Stone Creamery, and they're like, we're out of ice cream, but we do have life insurance?
Yeah, you know, I was there last week. I was really confused by it. I think it might be because the guy who owned that franchise also owned a life insurance business. But you know what, Mikey? If you're seeing that too where you're at, I wonder if it's more insidious than we think.
Yeah, it's probably a corporate mandate. Next, the teens drive away without getting gas, and they pick up a hitchhiker. This is the wiry madman. He freaks them right out. The man takes a picture of Franklin, demands Franklin pays him money for the picture, and then giggles as he slices open his own hand. Everybody's like, all right, dude, you got to get out of here. Jerry's all, that's the last hitchhiker we ever pick up. And it was like, man, hitchhiking was way more normal in the 70s than it is today.
My God, he like, okay, so he takes a picture of Franklin. Franklin's like, I'm not paying for that. Like, I never said I wanted that. He then brings out a piece of metal, puts the photo on it, then lights it on fire and has it just burn. And then that's when everybody like loses it. But they have a great conversation about slaughterhouses that is also goes on for way too long.
Right. So now we have both Franklin and this hitchhiker talking about slaughterhouses. Will that come into play later?
I wonder.
No. But it should. It sure should.
He also marks the side of their van with blood that looks like a symbol. And I do not know if it was or not. I tried to look this up after the fact and could not tell. Who knows? But so they're worried they're going to run out of gas since that gas station had no gas. So they stop at an old house owned by Sally and Franklin's parents. And it has an unusual number of bones within it.
Bones dangling from the ceiling, bones hidden under the couch cushions. It's like Easter, except with bones.
Yeah, they're like little talismans, as if they've been arranged purposely, not as if something crawled in there and died and then became bones. Very normal.
Kirk and Pam then go for a sex walk, which is a walk where you go somewhere to have sex. And they find another house, which, you know, is pretty mysterious. And so Kirk knows, you know, they need money, they need gas. Maybe these people who live in this house will give them gas. And he'll maybe trade his guitar for the gas instead of giving them money, as was the economy of the time. And Kirk goes inside this mysterious house. What happens next, Roxy?
Man, you know, a lot of people forget about the bartering system of the 70s. I'm glad you brought it up, Mikey, because it was a very interesting time. I can't imagine what it was like to be alive back then. So Kirk enters, and inside, Kirk finds Leatherface, who bludgeons him to death with a hammer, like, instantly, shockingly, out of nowhere. takes multiple blows to the head, just like cattle in the slaughterhouse. You might say.
Wow. Are we getting thematic here?
It might be.
The answer is no. I do think the answer is no, ultimately. Pam goes inside to look for Kirk. She finds a room full of chickens in cages and bones, which was the interior decorating style of the time.
I'm glad you mentioned it, Mikey. Again, people always forget about that in the 70s.
This movie is a window into 70s culture. It is very much people not using cash and people decorating their homes with whatever dead animals they find. Good old Pam is then also grabbed by Leatherface. It's like, this is happening. There is no like subtle buildup. There is no creeping through a house. There's no accidentally stepping on a cat to get a jump scare. It's just like, Leatherface is here. He grabs Pam. He lifts her up and stabs her in the back with a hook. And she's just dangling from her back wound. And then Leatherface makes Pam watch as he chops Kirk up with, you guessed it, baby, a chainsaw.
How's he getting...
The chainsaw massacre's on.
Yeah, there you go. It's the title of the movie. Like, how else are you going to get through all that bone? I don't know. I've never chopped off a person before, but I imagine a chainsaw helps.
It feels like the right tool for the job. Leatherface is like a good carpenter. He uses the right tool at the right time.
There you go. Yeah, and truly, these are like so sudden. It's part of what makes this movie so effective.
Yeah.
And guess what? This happened once. This happened twice. It then happens three times when Jerry goes looking for Pam and Kirk inside the house. He finds Pam almost dead in a freezer. Very unclear what happened with all that, for me anyway. And then Leatherface shows up and also murders him quite abruptly. There's Jerry. He's gone. He's exited the movie.
We go from five teens to two in like a second. It's like two scenes and we're down.
It's very jarring. And like none of them know what has happened to the other ones. They don't even know they're missing or dead at that point.
Right.
Wild.
At this point, we see Leatherface acting with despair. Like he's killed these three teens and then he like goes to the window in the chicken bone room and is like looking out the window just like, where are all these people coming from? I don't know what is happening here. And we get this little hint of like fear and depth from Leatherface that, honestly, I found very endearing.
He, like, nervously has his head, like, in his hands. He's, like, sitting in this chair, like, hunched over, and he's, like, this big form, and he just, like, kind of looks around, like, confused. He truly has no idea what's going on.
No.
Feels like a frightened child in some ways. Part of the horror of it, I guess. That night, Sally and Franklin argue about what to do and have a very awkward fight about a flashlight for what felt like 10 minutes. eventually, though, they take off together, with Sally pushing his wheelchair. And yes, they search for their friends. However, Leatherface pops up out of the woods, out of the darkness, and immediately chainsaws Franklin to death right in his chair. And Sally just runs away. Because what can you do about that? He's been chainsawed in a chair.
It's very, like, this movie feels like it's setting Franklin up for some sort of, like, kinship with the Texas Chainsaw family. It feels like he's talking a lot about meets, and then he meets the hitchhiker and is kind of, bonding with him, vibing,
sort of, for a time.
Yeah.
Strangely.
And we also get all these moments of him, like, emotionally frustrated, being, you know, the fifth wheel on the trip, that his friends are ignoring him. And it does feel like they're going somewhere with Franklin, like, maybe becoming a member of the Chainsaw family. And then, no, there's nothing to it.
He is suddenly
killed, and Sally runs away, and God bless.
It's strange, because he's, like, annoying and insufferable, but you can kind of understand where he's coming from. So it's like, he's annoying as fuck, but you pity him as well. He's like a pitiable character. One of his first establishing scenes is that he can't piss by himself, and they have to, like, stop by the side of the road for him to, like, be wheeled out and able to piss into, like, a cup or something.
Yeah.
Which is, like, weird way to start also with that character, but, I mean, it's, like, a very kind of vulnerable position to put someone in where it seems like he's ready to be pitied. And apparently this guy on the set, he never turned that off. He, like, kept the Franklin persona. He was, like, method acting in this movie to the point that it, like, made every one of his co-stars annoyed with him, where they were just like, Franklin is so unlikable. Now we have to be around him nonstop.
Which makes me wonder why it was important for him to be this way as a character in general.
Yeah.
Like, what purpose does Franklin serve if he is not saying anything more about the theme? We'll talk a little more about the theme of what I suspect this movie is maybe hinting at, but I do feel like this movie is, man, it sure is too bad that these people chainsawed all these kids. After Franklin is chainsawed by Leatherface, Sally runs. She is chased by Leatherface throughout the house. She also bursts into the house and is running up the stairs, bursts out the window. At the top of the house, however, we find Grandpa, a crazy old man who is sitting next to the skeleton of who we have to presume is Grandma. It's very, like, Psycho the Next Generation, like, if Norman Bates just continued to age. But we see this grandparent couple. She goes to this old grandpa, and she's like, hey, please help me, and he is sleepy. And this is when Leatherface continues his pursuit. Sally goes, leaps out a window, and escapes.
And she leaps out that window and continues on to the gas station from the beginning of the movie, where the Harbinger was warning them not to go over there. But they did anyway. However, we find out why that attendant is just so bad at managing a gas station. It's not his passion. His actual passion lies in cannibalism. Yes, the gas station attendant is the cook. One of the brothers, and he beats Sally up with the broom, another very awkward scene, ties her up, and then takes her back to the horrible Leatherface house.
Along the way, the cook picks up the hitchhiker, who is either his brother or his son.
I didn't get this clarification until afterward. I thought it was the father of the house. It is the oldest brother.
He is the oldest brother. Okay.
Yeah, and they never really make that clear in the movie. It had to be like when I was looking stuff up and they were referring to him as the oldest brother. I was like, oh, okay.
Okay.
Got it.
Interesting. We'll maybe have something to talk about there, too. In any event, the cook is verbally and physically abusive to the hitchhiker, which was how families interacted in the 70s.
Of course. People forget. Yes, we all know this.
Once they get home, the cook and the hitchhiker tie Sally up to a chair.
And guess what? Now that everybody's at the table, it's dinner time! The cook, the hitchhiker, Leatherface, and Grandpa's even brought down to sit with them. They all mock Sally as she writhes and screams and struggles and tries to bargain with to no avail. They don't want anything except to just be freaks at her and make fun of her. Grandpa also ends up drinking a little of Sally's blood when they cut her finger and let him suck on it. It's quite grotesque.
Mm-hmm.
And Leatherface himself came to dinner wearing a different outfit. He has a different mask of human skin that he is wearing with mm-hmm. a wig and makeup and a different outfit, too, suggesting that maybe he's a stand-in for the mother or something. Not sure.
So that's what I was kind of interested in this. Like, it does feel like Leatherface is playing the mother, and we maybe have the cook who is technically the older brother, but is maybe playing the father.
Yeah, there's a lot of playing house kind of vibes with all of this. Like, they feel so disconnected from any sort of reality.
Okay, I think I'm getting to a thesis statement about this movie.
Okay.
Okay, we'll keep going. Okay. We'll keep going. The hitchhiker decides to let Grandpa have the fun of killing Sally. Because Grandpa used to be so good at killing back in his day.
Apparently.
He needs to get back into it.
Apparently, they keep telling us that. I want to see proof.
I believe them. I think to have kids who are this comfortable with killing, they have to really have idolized it growing up.
Maybe.
That's my suspicion.
Or yeah, if he's really into it. I don't know.
But it's this trusting of Grandpa that turns out to be the family's demise. They hand him the hammer to beat Sally to death, but he's too old to hold that hammer. And Sally eventually just stands up and escapes.
Very goofy.
She jumps out of yet another window and escapes. God bless her. She is getting away.
With the hitchhiker and Leatherface in pursuit, Sally makes it to the highway where a truck driver just splatters the hitchhiker. And Sally waves that guy down, hysterical, trying to get him to let her into the car, which he does. But then, like, they don't drive off and Leatherface comes and they, instead of making the car drive, they just hop out the other side of the car, the other car door, and run away from Leatherface until yet another truck shows up. Not a big semi truck, it's like a regular truck. And Sally hops in the back of that while Leatherface cannot keep up with it and swings around his chainsaw, laughing maniacally. And maybe having a good time. I don't know. It seemed like he was having a good time, but you know, maybe
oh, really?
Maybe someone ought to check in on that guy. He might be masking his sadness with laughter.
I was definitely reading that as him just like losing his mind, that he's like, he let him go and he's just like, man, this is the worst thing that could have happened to me.
It feels kind of like a child having a tantrum where they don't know what to do with like
yeah.
their energy and their failure and the things that have happened in reality. So they just like have a freak out about it. Yeah, I could definitely see that.
So this is one of the very first slasher movies, right? This predates Halloween, if I'm correct.
I think Last House on the Left might be technically one of the first, but I think this, I actually don't know the date of that movie, but this is from 1974, so it's definitely like the earliest one that I have experienced.
Yeah, it's very early. It feels like it's still figuring out what this genre wants to be. It feels like it's tough to kind of convey any meanings. What did you kind of get out of this movie? What would you say thematically the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is about?
I mean, I feel like it was kind of ubiquitous to know this before even going into it. I'd often heard people talk about how it's about the meat industry and a comment on how human bodies, animal bodies, we're all kind of the same. And yet we treat like animals with such disrespect because we see them as lower than us in food. And so this family sees other humans that way. So they just don't give a shit. It's like, yeah, you're just meat to be prepared and eaten. You're not a cognizant human being who I can have a conversation with. I'm just gonna tie you to this chair and make a goof on you because I don't see you as as an equal in any way.
Yeah,
so I think I definitely got that coming through it, but then there is just like this corruption of the family dynamic intertwined with it. There's no parents, but we have the remnants of grandma and then whatever grandpa is. And then these three brothers of, like, varying ages, at least with the sense that the age difference between the oldest brother and the hitchhiker, who I don't know if he's the middle brother or youngest. I think maybe Leatherface is the youngest, you know, Mikey?
I have no idea. Okay. No. He reads as the youngest, but he feels older. I mean, we never see his face, but it feels older than the hitchhiker.
Yeah. So anyway, between the two ages of the characters whose faces we can see, they are very disparate ages. And then, yeah, their parents aren't around. So it's like these three brothers and their, like, decaying grandparents are somehow in this house. And they've just been doing whatever the fuck they've been doing. You see cars that are, like, the previous cars of their victims, where obviously they've been at this for a really long time. And you see all of the bone decorations and things that they've made out of their victims as well. where they've just been able to commit these horrors undisturbed in this corner of, like, nowhere Texas that nobody knows about. And could be
that
happening.
That feels like a big part of it to me,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, like, it could be happening in a rural part of the country near you, and you don't know. So it kind of instills that fear, too, of city versus country to an extent as well. Like, I feel like that's in there a little bit. So, yeah, I don't know. A lot going on. What about you, Mikey?
As we were talking about Leatherface playing the mother and potentially this older brother playing a father, I started to think about... Because I think this movie is almost a little didactic in how it's like, man, it's pretty fucked up what we do to the cattle industry. What if it happened to people? Like, it's pretty one-to-one. But I do kind of like this idea of Leatherface wearing a mask, mm-hmm. And then later playing a mother and even, like, getting into the brother playing a father. We can see these roles for the artifice that they are because we see Leatherface in this horrific mask. He feels inhuman. We see him trying to play human. We see them trying to play a family. There's almost this, like, condemnation of these familial structures that we put on ourselves that we're like, this is what makes us different than the animals.
Yeah.
We have families. We have structure. We have rankings. And ultimately... it's like to look at it through this horrific lens of grandpa sucking the blood of an innocent lady. We're just like, yeah, it's pretty stupid that we have these distinctions. We're just monsters. We're just monsters. Sorry. That's what we're doing here.
Well, I guess it just shows that we're so we're that close to being like humans are capable of this because of our intellect or whatever, that we can visit cruelty on people and animals and, you know, have the intelligence to not care about that because it's not us. So we'll just keep doing it, I guess, like this family does.
It does feel like they were getting to something about, like, if Franklin had, you know, switched teams, as it were, if he would have decided, like, because he almost feels closer to a cattle than anyone, right? He's very dependent on everybody. He is angry. Like, he almost feels like the stand-in for cattle. He sympathizes with them. He knows a lot about them, even though he knows about how they're being killed. But just in terms of the way Leatherface kills him, that feels closest to just like, Sally can run away. Like, he can't. He just feels like he is a lamb being led to slaughter. And the idea that he could maybe take part in the destruction of his friends that are pushing him away, I thought was, like, kind of interesting. And I thought what was going to happen in this movie, I was like, oh, they're definitely building Franklin to be this outcast. And then we get, like, it's a true condemnation of people eating meat because it's like, this is what the meat would do to you. They would come back and they would fuck you up. And we don't get it. It's just like, he's immediately taken off the board. And I just feel like it was a big missed opportunity.
Yeah, like, Kirk even has a line that basically is like, we should shoot Franklin and put him out of our misery. Not even implying that it's like, he's too pathetic to live on his own. It's like, we don't want to deal with him. Like, we're so sick of dealing with him. And, like, it's a joke, but at the same time, it's like, dude, what? And, yeah, he gets wheeled into the darkness. Because, like, that's why they have that really awkward fight over the flashlight that I brought up. Because it went on for so long. I was like, what are we doing here? Where she's like, Franklin, you're in a wheelchair. I have to go search for them in the dark. And it's uneven terrain, like the desert wilderness of Texas. Like, you stay by the car, it's safe. I'll come back for you. And he's, like, so scared to be left alone that he just won't let go of the flashlight so she can go off on her own. And so he like annoys her into bringing him along. And so she's like, okay, fine. So she's like pushing him around in this chair in the total darkness. And then, yeah, it kind of feels like any potential he had to be anything else than just like this annoying guy that they brought along, he just gets murdered immediately by Leatherface. And I mean, maybe that is in part to the theme where it's just kind of like they don't care. Like it doesn't matter. Like any potentiality he had is gone, just like any other victim. I suppose.
It does feel like a symptom of an early horror movie that doesn't... I feel like a lot of this movie is flabby because you were describing this very long fight over the flashlight where they say they convey the same information multiple times. There's a lot of just like bizarre scenes where we're like watching them at...
Yeah, like the scene with the hitchhiker, he does so many weird things that it's like one of those things would be enough to kick him out, but they just keep him there for an uncomfortable amount of time where he just keeps doing weird shit.
Mm-hmm.
Which was like, it was very unnerving. I was like, I can't believe this scene is still going on. What is happening?
Yeah.
He even has like a little bag around his neck that's like made of a taxidermied squirrel where I think you can still see the head and the arms and stuff. So it's like, just his looks alone, even before he starts acting weird, is like, what? Screams danger, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting point you raise. Like, I hadn't really thought about whether that might be intentional or not. But even if it is, like, we are not used to movies hanging around in that kind of discomfort for so long.
Yeah.
And without purpose. And that almost, like, conveys the sense of, like, man, this is really upsetting.
Yeah, to it, like, spend this much time
with this creepy guy.
The anxiety of this movie, where there aren't really, like, jump scares. Definitely not in, like, the modern sense of it.
Mm-hmm.
Where it feels like it's amping up the anxiety, which makes it a lot creepier and a lot weirder. And I think also because it feels sort of off base, it almost feels more realistic in a way. Where, like, you know, when you're writing a scene, you wouldn't need to have this much bloat to it. But somehow it feels more realistic because it's longer.
Mm-hmm.
In a way where it
that
would be like...
That is how real-life conversations with hitchhikers go. You let them... The first weird thing, you don't kick them out. You're like, what?
Yeah, it's more like, I need to get rid of them, but how can I do that now?
Yeah.
And then you just keep going, hoping maybe there's, like, an out for that or something. So, like... Yeah.
I was just reading this post on Reddit where a woman was describing, like, meeting a super attractive woman and, like, they were walking down the street together.
Uh-huh.
And the woman got catcalled and then turned to her friend, was just like, you're so lucky. Like, you have ugly privilege.
Wow.
Guys, don't do that to you. And then she talked about, she was like, yeah, okay, yeah. And then she, like, went to her car and cried. And she was like, I couldn't say anything in the moment because I was so flummoxed.
Yeah, like,
and
that's
that is
so-
kind of how-
Like,
yeah,
like a drive-by. Like, what the fuck? There's so much going on with that one comment. What the fuck? I'd freeze up too.
And so it does remind me of that hitchhiker scene where it's just like, there's so much going on. It's like, this guy's got a squirrel around his neck. Oh, and now he's taking a picture. And now there's like an economic demand. And also he's cutting, like, it, you're like, huh.
He showed them pictures of slaughtered animals he had taken as well.
Yeah.
That's what is in the little pouch around his neck. That and like the thing to start the fire when he lights the... picture on fire because they won't pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of those whole kids are just going like, huh, there's a lot happening here. I'm gonna go to my car and cry, but they don't have time to go to the car and cry because eventually they have to fight a Leatherface.
Yeah, like that scene with Sally strapped to the chair goes on for so long. There's so much of her just like screaming and writhing around and then them like laughing. To an uncomfortable degree where it's like, why are we still here? And it's because we're trapped with Sally. It very much feels like you are in her shoes in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all of these characters being very surface level, it makes it easier to project onto Sally, where she seems just very sort of like surface level, nice person, or like decent enough person, innocent person who does not deserve these things happening to her. And so it makes it a little bit easier maybe to kind of put yourself in her shoes because she doesn't have as many defining traits.
Sure. Yeah. She's got that Harry Potter, Gordon Freeman
Like
blank vessel that you're allowed to believe is you.
Yeah. She feels very much like that.
I could see that. This movie also, as I was watching it, I wasn't loving it, but I think describing it more as realistic, the way you kind of said like that hitchhiker scene, it's like real life. Conversations don't work the way they work in movies where it's just exactly the potent information that we need. This scene where Sally escapes from the family because they put her head in a bucket and the grandfather is trying to do it, it does feel like she just decides to get up and run.
Yeah.
But that is how it would probably feel to escape from a family like this.
Well, especially because
and
she
I've
had
done
been...
it, so I know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Mikey's got firsthand experience with it.
I've escaped from a family or two
that
in my day.
Family escape. Yeah. The goofy thing is, too, it feels like it's set up like a comedy because, like, Grandpa just keeps comically missing, like, hitting her on the head with a mallet. And they're, like, giving him, they're like, hey, Grandpa, here, hold the mallet like this. And, like, they're, like, helping him set it up and he just can't do it. And I think she realizes they're so preoccupied by this and they've missed so many times. I think I can actually get away now because I'm not tied to the chair.
Yeah. But it does feel like a movie of today would have made it very clear that, like, Grandpa would try to hold his fork. Like, they would set it up. They would set it up, and Sally would notice it. Like, there would be, like, shots that are, like, communicating to us.
Yeah, but or at least he wouldn't miss, like, 5 or 6 or 7 times, however many times it was. It felt so many times.
It just feels like it just happens. Things just are happening in this.
Which
you're right. Feels more realistic than I was maybe giving it credit for. I do really like it.
Yeah, and there were parts of this, like, I looked up, there's an hour-plus-long documentary, I think it's, like, a little bit over an hour, that they made, like, a documentary about behind the scenes, talking to people and stuff. It might have been on, like, a 20 years later anniversary DVD or something.
Okay.
I'm not sure. But they talked about, like, all kinds of behind the scenes stuff that is pretty wild. But, like, that scene in particular was, like, so gross and disgusting that they had crew members having to walk outside the house to puke because it was so rancid in there. So they made the actors wear the same clothes they were wearing for like a month. Same clothes, not allowed to wash them because then there won't be continuity. So they're wearing like gross, disgusting clothes for a month. So many of the props in that house are real decayed animals, and they've got real gross food on the table. And guess what? No ventilation. They had to close all the windows so it looked like it was nighttime. That shoot alone took, like, there's differing accounts of how many hours, but at least 12 hours, I believe. So it was, like, baking hot, one of the hottest summers in Texas in, like, a really long time. No ventilation, closed windows, no AC, definitely. So it was just, like, baking in there. And the smell was apparently just that bad. I can't imagine more horrible working conditions for this scene. And I feel like that grossness comes through in the final product, truly.
Yeah, it's a gross movie.
Yeah, it really is.
Were you able to eat any snacks while you were watching this movie?
You know, I can't remember. I probably didn't, though. I don't get as affected by that kind of thing. It's pretty gross. And also, I was like, this scene is going on for so long, something's going to happen. So I felt like so much like I couldn't look away. I couldn't pause it and go get a snack. I needed to see what was going on. What about you, Mikey?
I was eating a Chipotle burrito, just like popping into it, steak burrito. This is the wrong meal for what I'm doing today. It kind of looks like inside the Chipotle burrito, it does kind of look like the food on the table. It wasn't a good choice.
You just like put it down and you're like, maybe I'll eat this later. Or
I didn't do that. No, I still.
You soldiered through it.
Roxy, anything else you want to say about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
I mean, I'd suggest that if people like this movie, they go watch that behind the scenes thing because there's all kinds of crazy stuff. One of the craziest, though, is that like in order to fund this movie and get it put on screens, they literally had to make a deal with mafia folks.
The Sopranos?
Mafia. I mean, maybe they were the Sopranos of the 70s, Mikey.
Woke up this morning, got some funding for a movie.
Exactly. Nobody got residuals for this movie, and it was tied up in court because the mafia were like, we're making so much money off of this movie, of course we're not going to fucking give it to you. And they even, like, threatened the lawyers and stuff and, like, other people involved. They were like, we'll kill you. Stop it. Stop trying to take it from us or whatever. So they were like, okay, you guys are based in New York. We're going to, like, sue you long distance from L.A. so you can't come and get us unless you really want to
try it. And that's how they started Los Angeles.
Yeah, Los Angeles, the city.
The city was originally founded because there was so much mafia in New York and it was the only safe place from which to sue them.
You know, that makes a lot of sense. We're learning about all kinds of origin stories here, like the origin of the modern slasher and the origin of LA itself.
Roxy, do you have a fun question for me?
I sure do. So, Mikey, there's a lot of really, like, terrible meals in this movie, capping off with the one at the end. So my question for you is, what's the worst meal you've ever had?
I was a little kid and went over to, there was a kid named Paul who was kind of my bully, but I was kind of friends with him also.
Okay.
And I remember I went over to his house and his mom made pigs in a blanket, which feels like a layup, right? You put a hot dog in some breading and you bake it.
Yeah.
This isn't hard.
Shouldn't be. I'm scared to
hear. She had put some sort of sauce in between the bread and the hot dog.
Okay.
And I think the bread was maybe not fully baked.
Oh God, so it's and just like so soggy with mystery sauce.
It was soggy and slimy, and it smelled like, I remember it smelling like plastic. But because I was at my friend's house, and I'm not I certainly wasn't a child who was capable of being anything but polite when I was at their house. Mm-hmm. I soldiered through, I ate it, and it was one of the worst experiences of my life because I just remember like having to clench the muscles in my back and just bite into this rotten little pocket of hot dog meat. Oh. God, I hate it. I hate Paul Laborly. I hate his mom. I hate what she made me eat. It was the worst meal I ever had.
She bullied you without knowing it, just the way her son bullied
you. Yeah!
Socially.
That was a family of bullies.
Yeah.
I would have rather they were cutting my finger open and drinking my blood than making me eat their
yikes
pigs in a blanket slime.
Yikes.
What's the worst meal you ever had?
I know there were, like, definitely some times when I was a kid when I was like, ew, broccoli, that probably would have been more distinct.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the most recent one I can remember is, like, when I was moving from my old apartment, I'd gotten rid of, like, a bunch of groceries, had condensed some things, shipped other things, given away some things, until kind of, like, all I was left with and all that I had on hand. And because I'm moving and, like, it was between jobs, so I didn't have a new job yet, I was mm-hmm. like, I don't want to waste food. One thing, that's a big thing. But then two, I can't just go spend money. Like, I already had to hire a moving company, okay? So I'll just eat what I have on hand so I don't have to make any waste and can save money. And you know all that I had left, Mikey?
Oh, no.
I had a can of corn, which corn gives you, like, no fucking sustenance, can of green beans, and then some ice cream. It was, like, all I had left, some ice cream in the freezer. And I was like, I'm not going to throw away the ice cream. This can of corn and green beans, like, that's all I got. It was, like, I ate, like, maybe half of each of the cans, and I was like, what am I doing here? What am I doing? I should have just gone to, like, McDonald's. That would have been better. $5, whatever. Uh-huh.
So what you're describing, Roxy, is like an artisanal ice cream store's like summer flavor. They're like, we've got green bean and corn ice cream. If you've ever been to Salt and Straw in Los Angeles, they're like, I just tried
a too.
Potato salad ice cream. And I was like, shut up. Just make vanilla and caramel. What are we doing?
If only I was the founder of Salt and Straw, I could have made money off of my desperation.
Yeah.
If only.
Oh. Roxy, we gotta rate the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We gotta know eventually what our opinions are. We do have, here in the Scary Basement, a big box of hands. So if we want to give it more than two thumbs up, we can. Because
we've
got all these extra hands. Out of five thumbs up, how many thumbs up would you give the Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
So I gave it a 3.5. I think it was almost a 4.
Me too.
I think because, like, it's very decently made. It feels very unsettling. It does not... Like we were talking about scenes being extended, but at the same time, it doesn't waste its runtime. Like, it's a lot shorter than you would think.
Yeah.
And it's, like, set the stage for so many movies to come after it. And I think, like, yeah, that sort of, like, realistic approach, even though it had, like, tropes with teens, it felt, like, less manufactured and realistic in a way where I think it got banned in the UK because they were like, this is a snuff movie. So
yeah.
There was a craze about it at the time, so... it's, like, almost a 4, but it's still, like, it's unpleasant. It's an unpleasant watch. Like, I've watched it once. I'm like, it's very solid. Never want to watch it again. I'm good.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why it's 3.5 and not higher for me.
Wow.
What about you?
I also gave it 3.5 out of 5.
Okay, look at that.
Because
in sync, the parts first of this movie episode of the that season.
Are... Yeah, yeah. I'm glad we're on the same page as we're trying to survive this new encounter. We can at least agree we don't have to fight about our scores for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The moments of this movie that are great are so great. You're right. It's so upsetting. It's so scary. The way Leatherface is introduced and he just, like, bangs out three of our five main characters is incredible and scary and upsetting. But then there's also just a lot of things that occur. And it's really my, like, least favorite thing to happen in a movie when just an event happens. And there's kind of no reason and it's sort of not, like, built to. And also, this is an ironic problem for this movie to have. There's a lot of meat left on the bone. Franklin's whole story is very intriguing, and then he just dies. I would like a little more of grandpa and the brother and kind of what their plan is and what the grave robbing is. Like, it does feel like there are a lot more cool and interesting ideas than are really explored. So it kind of has too much going on and also not enough going on. But still, for that, for it to have that quality about the movie, that would be a 1 out of 5 thumbs for any other movie. And for it to get this high, like, the moments that are effective in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre are amongst the scariest things I've ever seen in a horror movie. It rules.
Yeah, and you know what, Mikey? If you want an expanded extra lore version, I think, like, all of these sequels just dig into that part. They're like, hey, people want to know about the family. We'll make them the highlight here.
Interesting.
I have not seen them myself, but that has been my general takeaway, hearing anything about them and hearing anybody talk about them. So maybe someday we'll find out by doing any of those sequels here.
That's interesting. I would be very into that. Roxy, to wrap up our talk on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I would like to hear from you a little palate cleanser recommendation. What movie or book or TV show or amusement park or overall entertainment experience would you consider to be the opposite of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
So for me, it's Fallout 76, a game I've been playing a lot of recently. Basically just multiplayer Fallout 4, but you know what? Fallout 76, you're experiencing a dystopian nightmare with cannibal families. And unlike the movie, you can shoot those families and take their stuff and then make your own house out of it, which is exactly the opposite of what we got going on here.
Yeah, a lot of control in that game.
Yeah.
You can affect your circumstances instead of being a cattle being led to slaughter, as it were.
Yeah, here's a shotgun. Here's a grenade launcher. Here's a pistol, and you can blow up all these cannibal raiders and whatnot. Don't stand a chance. And you can do it with friends. You're not alone. So it's a group of you against bunch of cannibals.
It's such a different experience fighting cannibals with your friends than it is fighting them alone.
Yeah.
Again, I have a lot of experience with this.
You do, real life experience. Mine is all simulated.
I had a really bad birthday party 1 year.
Uh-oh.
Nobody came to, and I was abducted by cannibals. It's just,
God, one of those things bad. Two of those things at once on your birthday? Come on, man.
Birthday.
I'm sorry, Mikey.
Thank you. I got a palate cleanser recommendation for you as
well. Yeah, let me hear it.
My palate cleanser recommendation, the opposite of Texas Chainsaw Massacre for me, is NBC's Parenthood.
Okay.
It's a delightful 5-season show about a family that, sure, has a couple of little issues, but at the end of the day, they're healthy, they talk them out, they have a great time together. Really the opposite of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, who, sure, has a little problems, but ultimately they're abusive to each other and they take them out on innocent people who are killed and eaten.
Yeah, hey, they got the right idea. That's why they're called Modern Family, right? They don't exist in the
70s. They're not called Modern Family. Modern Family is a different and worse show.
Oh, wait, sorry, what was it?
Parenthood.
Parenthood, okay, I'm sorry. I don't actually know what Parenthood is then. I have not seen that show.
It's by the same creator of Friday Night Lights.
Oh, okay. Of course you love it because of that.
It's a little sillier, but it is deeply emotional. And it's just a family that, you know, is going through family stuff. I want to say Uncle Dax, but the actor who plays him is named Dax. Uncle Dax Shepherd is mad at Christina, and then Christina, his sister-in-law, but, you know, she's having a baby, so he's got to take her to the hospital. And then, of course, when he's there and Adam, Christina's husband, can't make it on time, they both fall in love with the baby, his nephew, Christina's new son, and they forget their fight altogether. It's a very sweet show. That's about as high as the stakes get. is Christina going to hate Uncle Dax?
I mean, that sounds pretty pleasant after all of this mayhem and murder. I'm up for it. Sign me up.
It's really nice. I feel nice just hanging out, talking about fun, you know, Fallout 76, a fun multiplayer game, NBC's Parenthood, a fun show. I think we're going to be okay, Roxy.
Inside. Get ready to die.
Oh God, Roxy, he's here. I think this is the end.
Mikey, it was fun hosting a podcast with you.
Hold on. Your podcast? What's your podcast about?
We talk about horror movies?
I like horror movies. I like it when the people get killed, especially the sexy teens. And now, Mikey and Roxy, you're the sexy teens!
Thanks, man.
And you're gonna die!
On the bright side, maybe they'll make a horror movie about us.
Good luck! They never make horror movies about killers like me!
I don't know, I mean, you're basically Leatherface.
Huh? I am?
Yeah, man, you're insane, you wield a chainsaw, you kill people for no reason. You're a lot like Leatherface, if I'm being honest.
Wow! Golly! Golly! Huh.
Are you getting emotional?
Well, I never thought someone like me could star in a horror movie. I'm sorry, guys, I don't mean to take it this far.
Hey, don't be embarrassed, pig guy. Seeing someone like yourself in a prominent position is powerful, even if that self is evil. That's why I can kind of understand why Kanye West supports Donald Trump, you know what I'm saying? He's a narcissist, Donald Trump's a narcissist. It's just cool to see someone like yourself up there on the big stage.
Well, still, I bet Leatherface has a much cooler origin story than I do.
Nah, man, in Texas Chainsaw Massacre the beginning, Leatherface's mom just gives birth to him in a meat processing plant. He's just kind of born evil.
Wow! I was born evil!
Sorry, you were born, not built. You're a robot, right?
You know, Pigbot, if you became a horror movie monster, just think about what it would mean to all the little Pigbots out there to see you up on the silver screen.
There are more Pigbots out there?
Oh, yeah! And not all of them look like me. Some of them look like humans. And they've achieved prominent positions in government around the world. Keep your eyes open. You know, you two sexy teens, well, you made me reconsider things. Maybe I can be a horror movie monster. I guess I don't need a neat motivation for my evil like Chucky. I mean, he kills so he can have a new body for his soul. Or Hannibal Lecter hates rude people to show that status-wise, he's as far above them as human beings are above animals. I don't need any convoluted mythology. I can just be myself.
And that's enough.
And that's enough! Right!
Sounds like you've had yourself a real awakening, Pigbot. Maybe you can let us go?
No! No! Now you're gonna die! Sexy teens getting chopped up!
You bastards, run!
Oh my god!
Thank you for listening to Scary Basement. Make sure that you follow us on Twitter @scary_basement. And on Instagram @scarybasementpod. Roxy, what? Where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on Twitter and Twitch as Redmage Roxy. Go check me out.
I'm on Twitter at SecretFlip. Twitch.tv/SecretFlip. Make sure to give us 5 stars on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Oh, God.
Also, leave a review. That really helps us out. And another way you can show your support is by checking out the Patreon for our podcast network, Super NPC. Sign up at Super NPC's Patreon, patreon.com/supernpcradio, and you'll get a bonus episode of Scary Basement, covering horror video games by us, as well as years of content from the rest of the video game loving folks over Super NPC. Thank you.
And don't forget to share this podcast with your friends. Oh, God, we're gonna die. See you next week.